June. Birds chirping. Insects buzzing. The start of summer. Children playing. Summer brides having their wedding. The mowing of the lawns. Now, what have we forgotten?
Yes,
I'll tell you what you've forgotten. You've forgotten the Pride 48 June event.
Don't forget it.
2019.
Oh, your favorite little
June. June 21st, 22nd, and 23rd.
From home live streaming.
Listen live.
Stream your podcast.
Join in the chat room.
Go to Pride48.com for more information.
Today is Sunday, March 31st, 2019, and my name is Adam. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Geeky Gay, the show that is a personal journal of my life and whatever I want to talk about. And I don't remember now if I said my name is Adam. Anyway, my name is Adam, and I'm not going to do that intro over again, so welcome. So last time we were talking about the Disney cruise, and I'm gonna hold that off. So I know everyone is waiting with bated breath, or whatever you say. Do you say waiting with bated breath, on bated breath, full of bated breath? I'm not sure, but I know everyone has been waiting to hear day two, day three, day four of that, you know, wonderful cruise that I went on. But I'm going to stop, and on the next episode, I'm going to talk about day two. Maybe I'll fit in the whole rest of the cruise on the next one. But I wanted to talk, while it's fresh on my memory, I wanted to talk about something. And so executive decision. So anyway, I do want to talk about jury duty. So I think I did a podcast back in December. It was probably the last one that I did before I kind of went on a little bit of a hiatus, and then I came back in March, and I talked about getting called for jury duty and having an orientation. And so, you know, and now, so the orientation was just, you know, this is what to expect. These are the rules. These are the procedures, et cetera, et cetera. And then you guys will be letting us know that we would be on call or whatever from January through the end of April. And so if we had any vacations planned or anything like that, we have to call ahead of time and let them know we would not be available on particular dates. So anyway, we were well into March, and I was thinking, I may never get called. You know, this is Arkansas, and it's not a big city. You know, I mean, people are probably laughing who live in big cities right now, but this is the largest area of the state. I was looking, and I believe we have about 500,000 people, not in my town, but in the Northwest Arkansas area, and which actually is larger than the biggest city in Alaska. I was also looking at that because, hey, we're planning our summer vacation, and it looks like it may be an Alaskan cruise with a couple of days in Canada doing a little touring or something like that. We're not sure exactly yet, but that's what it's looking like. Anyway, so, you know, we don't have a lot of jury trials. We were told that there are not a lot of jury trials. And so, you know, it's iffy whether or not you would actually be called. And I was thinking, oh, I'm probably not going to be called because I'm almost to the end of March. And so, you know, I'm probably not going to get called. So anyway, I got a call. And, you know, one thing that kind of surprised me is I got a call and literally jury duty was starting the next day. So I got a call last Monday and she said, you're going to need to be in jury on Tuesday. And so, you know, so they don't give you any notice at all. They're not joking around when they say, hey, if you're going to be on vacation or you're going to have any days where you're not available, you need to call us and let us know beforehand, because when it's time for you to go, it's time for you to go. There's no wiggle room or anything like that. So anyway, I was excited because I've always wanted to be on jury. Like, I've always wanted to be on a jury. And I was really excited about it. And luckily, there was nothing big going on at work where I had to, you know, plan for people to cover for me or anything like that. So I got up the next morning and got up a little bit earlier because we had to be in the courtroom before I'm normally at work. So, and I needed to plan for traffic and parking and everything like that. So I went in and I think there were around 53 of us, and I know that seems like an exact number, but they were waiting on people to show up and doing sort of a roll call, and I remember her saying the number 53. And we were supposed to be in the courthouse at 8:15. I parked, I went through security. I think I was walking in like at 8:14, so I was doing pretty good there. And then we had to wait because there were some stragglers that weren't there on time. And everybody has to be there. And I don't know what the punishment is or what the consequences are if you miss it. But one person did not show up. So I don't know if he's in jail now or, you know, I'm not really sure. So then they go through what they call, they had a little bit of a opening, you know, the judge kind of thanked us for serving, et cetera, and told us what was going to happen. And this is the part. So the reason it can be unlikely that you're actually ever going to serve on a jury, especially if you're in a small town, is you have a couple of different processes you have to go through. So the first process is you have to, you know, be called randomly. I mean, randomly your name is chosen out of the entire voter registration pool, I believe is the way most. It may be different from state to state, but in Arkansas, it's done from the voter registration. And so, first of all, you know, the thousands of people that are registered to vote, hundreds of thousands probably, you know, that is the pool that they're choosing from. So, first of all, you have to be randomly chosen from that pool of, you know, thousands of people. And then that is just to put you in a pool for a set period of time. So then I was in a pool from January through the end of April. So then the second thing that has to happen is, you once again have to be randomly selected from that pool of, you know, hundreds of people, we'll say. So then, you know, when you get selected for that, then there's a third part of it, because you're still not on a jury at that point. They select how many ever. In my case, it was 53. I don't know if there's a standard number, but they choose a certain amount, and then you go through what's called voir dire. Voir dire is when they again randomly choose 12 people from the audience, from the, you know, 53 in my case. You go up to the jury box, and then the defense and the prosecution has a chance to ask you questions and decide whether they want you to be in their jury or not. And they can call multiples of 12, you know, so they have multiple rounds of this where they're going through the people. So I get in there and I'm like, eh, there's 53 people in here. There's no way that, you know, they're not going to call me. I'm not going to be in the first group that's called. They're probably going to find their jury in the first group and they're going to send me home. So then they start saying, okay, well, we're going to go to the computer here and we're going to randomly select 12 people. And wouldn't you know it, my name is like the sixth name called. So I'm really excited at this point because, you know, ooh, I'm going to be on the jury, or I may be on the jury. Now I'm nervous because, and I know most people are thinking, oh my God, Adam, like, why would you want to be on a jury? It's boring. You know, you should be, most people are thinking of how they can get out of it. And now this is what's crossing my mind at this point. It's okay, I've got to answer their questions correctly so that they want me on their jury. So then they're asking questions, they're asking each of us questions and et cetera. And they say if anything is too private, you know, we can go up to the judge and talk privately, you know, at the bench or whatever. And really, it wasn't exactly like it is on TV because, and it probably depends on the case, but the questions mostly were generic questions to the entire jury. And then they might go to a person or another and ask their personal opinion. They wouldn't necessarily focus on one person and ask them a bunch of questions. I watched this show called Bull where they would, you know, they will go up to a specific juror and they will have a question tailored for that juror, you know, or something like that. So in at least in my case, it wasn't, they were much more generic than that. The other thing is, I'm used to on TV seeing they ask a question. If someone gives an answer that they don't like, they immediately say, we're happy with this juror, or we would like to excuse this juror. And then the juror immediately, you know, leaves. The way it worked in our session was they ask questions, both defense and prosecution. And then they go up to the judge. We have no idea what they're saying. They're whispering. And then when they're done, the judge says, okay, I'm going to read a list of names. These are the ones that have been accepted into the jury. Anyone I don't mention, you're free to go. So the defense, when the defense started asking their questions, they were asking me, I don't remember what all they were asking, but a lot of the questions centered around, you know, what do you think is fair? What do you think is just? You know, the defense wanted to know, would we have any problem giving a minimum sentence for the particular crime? Not knowing any of the details, but would we just have any particular, you know, reason why we wouldn't be able to give a minimum if the circumstances were right? And then, but there was one question, and she said, if someone chooses not to testify, what are some reasons why you think that they wouldn't testify? And I'm not thinking, for some reason, I'm not thinking the defendant. I don't know who I'm thinking because, I mean, anybody else who's subpoenaed has to testify. But the defendant has a choice whether or not they want to testify. And she comes to me and she's like, Joseph, because once again, oh my God, I want to change my name legally because I'm sick of everyone. Everything legal or anything where I'm using a passport, just like I talked about on the cruise, I have to use the name Joseph. So they're like, they said Mr. Burns. But anyway, regardless, she's like, so what do you think about that? And I said, well, you could just get nervous. You could be a person that gets nervous in front of people, you know, like we're doing right now. We're in front of like 60 or 70 people. And you could just think that it's going to be really difficult to get up and testify. Or you could be hiding something. And then immediately when I said you could be hiding something, I thought, shit, she's going to want to strike me immediately. Because what I've basically just said is, oh, if the defendant doesn't testify, I think he's hiding something. Which is, so then I'm thinking, oh my God, I have just answered poorly and they're going to strike me from the jury. And I really want to be on the jury. I want to go through this experience. And anyway, so, but we get to the part where they're reading the names and for whatever reason, they kept me. And I don't know, you know, I think they have each side has a certain number of strikes, but then maybe the other side can object. Maybe the prosecution wanted me. I don't know. Or maybe I'm just overthinking it and, you know, they didn't have a problem with me. But, you know, that was crossing my mind. So I was selected. And then the case was, I'm not going to have time to go into, probably everyone's grateful that I'm not going to have time to go into a bunch of detail, but it was a 3-day trial or it ended up taking around 3 days and that included jury selection. And the defendant was a guy who had basically him and a girl that he was friends with and several other people who were witnesses in this case were all meth addicts. And he would get really paranoid when he would be on meth, and he ended up getting mad at this girl. He was over at her house. He ended up forcing her to go with him, and he got mad at her about something and paranoid about something and decided that he wanted to kill her. At least this is what he was saying. He's like, I'm going to kill this bitch to several people. He even told her, you know, I'm going to kill you, etc. She even at one point told him, please, if you're going to kill me, take me back to my house because my family won't find me if you, you know, and they were driving around. They went, we don't know whether they were buying meth at this other house, but they went to this other house. Then, you know, he's forcing this person to drive them around and they, all of this stuff happens, which I'm trying to really condense. And he ends up shooting her in the leg in the car and tells the guy he needs to find a wooded area so he can finish her off and have a place to dump the body. But at some point, the driver convinced him. I don't know if he convinced him not to shoot her or he just said, look, man, I got to go home. It's late. I got to work in the morning. You know, I'm not going to drive you out in the woods or whatever. And he drove. She ended up being carted around to two or three different houses. Some people addicted or that were on meth probably at the time were trying to dig the bullet out of her leg. He did other things like he shot a hole in her wall before he made her leave. But he was charged with kidnapping. And then if you have a gun, there's an additional, you know, on top of that, an enhancement, they call it. He was charged with assault, battery, possession of a gun by a felon because he was already a felon. But all of his other charges were pretty much drug charges. So paraphernalia and other things of that nature. And what else? Oh, making a terroristic threat. I think that's it. That was five. And the prosecution was really good, actually. I mean, they had witnesses lined up. They had cell phone records. They showed us. They had a video. This guy, this stupid guy in this YouTube generation, after she's been shot, like the day after, finally somebody takes her back to her house. But no one has taken her to the hospital. She's laying in bed. This guy comes back over to her house, takes her cell phone, and makes a video of himself smoking meth with a homemade meth pipe that he's created. And he's laughing about the fact that her leg got shot. And that's like what the prosecution started with, showing us that video. So we pretty handily found him guilty. I mean, that was not hard for us to do. The defense had no evidence to the contrary. They were just trying to poke holes. So the, you know, the girl who got shot in the leg, she has this love-hate relationship with the defendant and she's in love with him. And so she had recanted her story at some point, but we felt like it was either he got to her and she was afraid or it was because she's in love with him. And, you know, she's battered and usually people who are abused, you know, they have a history of recanting. And, you know, the other thing was prosecution had made a deal with one of the witnesses to lessen a charge that they were facing, but that person seemed really reliable on the stand and what they were saying made sense and also lined up with all the other evidence. Anyway, so we found him guilty, but then the next day we go in and what I didn't realize was we also had to determine the sentence. And I always thought the jury determined innocence or guilt and then the judge decided what the sentence was going to be, at least in a criminal case. I mean, in civil where people are suing companies and stuff, I know the jury decides an ultimate number, like we're awarding $250 million, you know, or whatever. But I didn't think we were going to have to decide on the sentence. So we hear testimony in the morning from both prosecution and defense as to why we should either give a light sentence or a heavy sentence, you know, depending on which side it was. The defense brought out his mother and she was crying and saying he was a good boy and his dad abused him when he was young and he was trying to quit meth and it was all the things he did were just because of meth and, you know, all of this. Well, we get in. So basically we're given ranges of years. So like kidnapping was 10 to life. You know, the other ones were either 5 to 40 or 0 to 15. Some of them had enhancements or years that you could add on for having a gun in the commission of that crime. Some of them had fines that you could give. And then we had the choice of consecutive or concurrent. So concurrent is when you serve all the terms together. So basically whatever your largest amount of years is, that's all you have to serve, because you're serving all of your days or your years at the same time. Or consecutive, which means each amount of years that you're given for each one adds up. The judge cannot change the number of years, but the judge can change whether it's consecutive or concurrent. Well, we get in there and we go around the table. Everyone's giving their opinion one at a time. And 10 out of the 12 wanted life. Life has no chance of parole. So if we give life, there is no parole at all. If we give a number of years, then each of those have a set amount of time that they have to spend before they're eligible for parole. So I did not feel that life was appropriate. I didn't feel the crime. He shot her, yes, and everything he did was really bad. I mean, really bad. But I feel that people have the ability to be redeemed, to change their lives, to, you know, and so, and to say that he would get no hope of ever getting out again, he didn't kill anyone, he didn't, you know, I just felt like life was not what we should give him. So, and one other guy agreed with me, and so we were going back and forth, and I even told them, I'm like, you know, if a majority of the table wants to give life, I'm not going to keep us here for days, you know, we're not going to have a hung jury. I will go along with what the majority of the table says, but I do not feel comfortable with that. And the foreman said, no, we've all got to be comfortable with whatever sentence that we're giving out. So finally, he came up with a compromise where we would give a number of years that, should he have to serve consecutively, would be more than life. And then we would choose consecutive, because we had to choose consecutive or concurrent. And then if the judge disagreed with us when we, you know, gave her our recommendation, then she could switch it to concurrent and he would have the possibility of parole and getting out. So we ended up giving this guy 200 years consecutive. But if the judge overruled us and changed it to concurrent, it would be around 50 years. But he's 36, so he would not be getting out of jail till he was 86. So I agreed to that, and the other guy who was with me agreed to that, because we felt like the judge was more experienced than us. And if she overruled us, then, you know, fine. If she didn't, then we're depending on the judge to kind of help make that decision. Anyway, overall, it was a very interesting experience. I'm kind of guilty for the amount of years that we gave the guy. I mean, yes, he has done very bad things. He has another case in April also for kidnapping. So regardless of what we had given him, I feel like after all his cases are through, he probably would have been in prison for life anyway. But that was my experience. So if any of you guys have been on jury duty, you can let me know how your experience was. I would definitely do it again, because I found it to be a very interesting process. And also the prosecutor, the lead prosecutor, was very good. He was very good. His opening and closing statements were great. Defense wasn't as good, and maybe it's just because they didn't have a very good case. But they were not as good. But I enjoyed the experience overall. So I'm going to read contact. And Matt Burlingame, I have a voicemail from you somewhere, but I ran in here to record this, and I did not. I forgot prep your voicemail. So I'm so sorry, but I will get you on the next one, I promise. But I do have an email from Sam in the hinterlands, as she's called, on Big Fatty Online, and so I wanted to go ahead and read that. She says, "Greetings. Because I enjoy the TV Trio podcast you do with Faye and Fatty, I listened to your solo show, What Timing, with the new episode and all, and enjoyed it as well. I was really interested to hear about the Disney cruise, as my family and I have considered those ourselves. I, too, enjoy cruise travel. I've done a couple on my own, and it's great. I would not have liked the guy doing the heckling bit either." That's where the guy was talking about, "Oh, are you wearing a hat because you're balding?" You know. "And I find the whole dining with strangers thing so disturbing that I managed to avoid it both times. Looking forward to the next show. Best, Sam from the hinterlands." Well, thank you, Sam. I'll get back into the cruise on the next one, but I appreciate your feedback. If anyone else wants to email me, adamburns.uk@gmail.com is the email address that you'll use, and that would be fantastic. So the last thing I want to talk about in the last 5 minutes or so is my sous vide. So I got my bonus. And so when I get my bonus at work, which I got it in March, I always I buy myself some little gadget or two. You know, 1 year I bought an iPad. 1 year I even bought a laptop for Mark. But I always get myself a little something, and then I put a huge chunk in savings because we're saving for a down payment for when we buy a house. And so I put a big amount in savings, and then, you know, the rest goes towards travel or, you know, a gadget or a couple or, you know, whatever. You guys know that I like to buy a lot of gadgets all the time. So I decided to get a sous vide because I constantly struggle with cooking meat. And it's either tough or it doesn't quite get cooked enough, or, you know, I never get that perfect temperature, especially with like beef. Chicken, you know, you pretty much need to overcook chicken so that it's not, it doesn't kill you, basically. But, and for some reason, pork now is safe at a lower temperature than it used to be, and I'm not really sure why. It used to that you would get trichinosis or something, which is like worms, I think, if you ate pork that wasn't cooked fully. But anyway, now they're saying that you can go to like 145 or something like that, which it used to be like 160 or something. So I got a sous vide, and I tried it for the very first time last week. And this was one of the ones, it's one of the cheaper ones. It was about $115 or something, but it was the Wirecutter website. This is the one they recommended. It's by Anova, I think is the name of the company. And you attach it to the side of a pot. And in my case, I bought a Rubbermaid square plastic container that has a special lid to put this sous vide down through. The sous vide looks like looks like a tube or something, like a stainless steel tube with controls at the top. And then it has a little screw thing that you attach it to the side of whatever. And basically you fill the thing up with water, the pot, or in my case, the Rubbermaid container. And you put the sous vide down, set the temperature you want it, and it circulates the water, but it keeps it exactly at the temperature that you set. You put your meat or whatever you're cooking in a bag, and in a Ziploc or a vacuum seal bag, and you can do it with seasoning or without, depending on how, you know, what you're cooking and how you want to do it. And then you immerse it in that water that's exactly the temperature you want your meat to be. So if I wanted I did filet, and if I wanted it to be 140, I would set the sous vide at 140, let it get up to that temperature, put the meat in the bags, and then, immerse the bags or submerge the bags in the water. And then you cook it for 2 or 3 hours or more, depending on the thickness of the meat. Anyway, and then you don't get the brownness because you're basically you're not boiling, but it gets it to the exact temperature all the way through, and then you sear it. And you can add your butter and sear and all that at a really high heat for a very short, like for a minute per side or less. And then I just want to say, perfect steak. It was so good. It was really good, so tender, the exact temperature we wanted it, and the outside was nice and brown and caramelized because of searing it. I loved it. I'm going to keep doing it, so I'll report on other stuff that I do in the future. All right, for more information, you can go to geekygay.com. You can email me, adamburns.uk@gmail.com, or you can call 229. I don't remember the phone number. I'll do it next time. Or you can find many more podcasts over at pride48.com. I'll see you guys in the next episode. Bye, everyone. This show is part of the Pride 48 Network.
Find more shows over at Pride48.com.